Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2615. That's 2615. Tonight we're having a really, really good guest, and I ask that you call one. We have a panel building. I'd like to have a few more, though. That'd be great. Okay, the number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Okay, I'm Carol Levine, and I will be hosting this show. And again, we have a really good guest. Her name is Dr. Tina Medina, okay? She's from Kansas City, Kansas. And we have a panel here. We have Pamela from Louisiana. She's also ambassador, and she's part of the board, just like I am. And we have our guest, and we have Bill from California. He's our founder. We have Peter from Ontario. And if a few more of you want to call in, that would be great, okay? Okay. Let me read the mission statement, and then after that, okay, we'll get to our guest here, and it should be a good show. It's going to be a good show. Okay, the mission is we have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect, and we do so from two different ways. Two different ways we do this. Number one is educating the public, so important, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. We know this. Okay. Number two is offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues of involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, I ask people who are listening, all right, to get involved with our website. That's NASCA, NASCA.org, NASCA.org. And if you do that, you're going to learn an awful lot of things. If you scroll down to the red lines that are there, bars, whatever you want to call them, there's so much information under that. And there's so much that can be learned from that, okay, right there. And then also, too, we have the contact page. And if you need to contact someone in the AM, I'm the night owl. A lot of times I sound hoarse because I'm up all night. I talk. And we all know I'm a talker. So anyway, the point is, you know, we offer all kinds of things to people so that they don't have to feel alone and so that they can have support. And then we Monday through Friday, we have, you know, the different shows that we have. On Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays, we have our special guests. Like tonight, we have a special guest. And on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we have our professionals that come on. They're survivors also, 99% of the time. And they, you know, work with people who call in who have questions and also people on the panel who have questions. So that's just a little bit of what NASCA does. Okay, I got that out of the way. And what I'd like to do is turn our attention now to our guest. And again, her name is Dr. Tina Medina. Tina, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to be with your organization. I have a great deal of respect and honor and really admiration for what your organization does. And I just believe it's beautiful because right now people need help, and most importantly, people need hope. So I'm very, very grateful to be here.
I'm very happy that you're here also. We all are. And you're quite right. Our world is a mess right now, but we know that God has a plan for that, and it'll straighten out sooner or later. I won't go past that because I don't have a time limit on this. Okay, I can't tell you when that's going to happen. But why don't you start out by telling us your story, because there's a lot of people that are listening on their computers right now, and they would love to hear about you. Go ahead.
Well, I grew up in a Hispanic middle-class family, and my mother, to be honest, was always, I think I would say half of my life, she was sick with kidney failure, and this was back in the mid-70s, and she was probably one of the first to, like, have a home dialysis machine, which is kind of, it was, like, innovative then at the time. And because of her sickness, oftentimes we would spend the night at my uncle and my aunt's house, and my uncle would, now I realize, you know, he was trying to sexually stimulate me, and he would touch me inappropriately. And it happened for about, I would say, like 5 or 6 times. And it was really, it really shook me as a child, because he also told me, he threatened me, you know, not to tell anybody. So as a little girl, I was really shook up. And even to this day, I don't like to be woken up, right, because that's when he would touch me inappropriately. And so it was just a really difficult time. And then later, my mom died when I was 14. So now that, you know, I'm 55, I kind of realized it was trauma upon trauma, and I would have nightmares, and I would just, I never told anybody until I was like 32 years old, and I kept this dark secret that nobody knew about, and it was painful. And so now that I look, you know, back, I can see, and in a lot of my books, I write for the little girl in me. You know, the person that needed help, the person that was afraid to talk, the person that was afraid to use her voice. And that is my story. And when I was 32 years old, I went to a Pentecostal church and received ministry. And it was really bold because that whole spiritual experience then allowed me to open my mouth and talk. And I told my father and I told my family what had happened. And so it was a happy ending in the sense that my family did know. And when I shared it with, you know, my dad, he's like, well, why didn't you ever say anything? And I told him I could not speak. I did not have the strength to say anything. And so now I write books to encourage people to use their voice. Because it's so important to tell the story, right, to process that pain and to begin to break the chains of bondage which keep us captive.
Well, you know, I totally agree with you. You know, when I wrote my book, and I would say this every once in a while, then there was only 2 books on Amazon. Because I wrote my book a long time ago now, like 10 years ago or something, and about sexual abuse, my memoirs. And it's amazing because at that time, there was my book and this other book. That was it. And now, thankfully, people are starting to talk, okay? And we have a lot of books that come out. We have a lot of authors. And it's so, so, so important, you know, for people to be, you know, to have this awareness that you speak about and to understand better what children go through. you know, I know that, you know, with complex PTSD, I had been diagnosed with that at one time. Because when you know, as a doctor, I don't have to tell you, but, you know that when something happens, when trauma happens time after time after time after time, it turns into complex PTSD. And it's such a weight on society, certainly a weight on the child, on the family. And this is why a lot of times kids get into trouble. Let me ask you. I'm going to go to the I'm going to go to the panel and see if it's a little bit early, but let's see if they have any questions they'd like. Go ahead, Pamela.
No, I'm just still listening to the you know, I just want to say I'm so sorry that your mother couldn't be there for you. You know, so many of the mothers, you know, aren't there for their children for one reason or another. Sure, your mother would have been able to protect you more probably had she not been on in kidney failure. Is that true, you think, Dr. Medina?
Yes, I do. And I think it brings up the whole, this whole last year, I was thinking about, you know, because my mom was sick, you know, how do pedophiles get access to children? You know, it raises that whole question. And I was actually writing an essay, and this whole thing came, it was like a wave of just realizing, hey, your uncle had access to you because your mother was sick. Now, in other circumstances and in other situations, children are either left with, you know, either like in my case, family members, or they're just put in very, very delicate positions. And I think we're seeing that today with COVID because the numbers of child abuse are going up, right? Child molestation, child rape, the numbers are really sky high right now. So it is a delicate time. And I think, again, I'm so glad we're here to talk about it because I think the two words are help. You know, children need help. Teenagers need help. Adults need help, especially to be able to process their pain that may have happened, you know, 30 years ago. But also hope. I think your show brings hope to the listener because I think that the bottom line is how do we begin to process pain that occurred, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, and how do we do that with love and compassion and, you know, consideration, but most importantly, an understanding. You know, I think that that is what your organization stands for, and that's why I'm so glad we're here today.
Absolutely, and I just praise God that, you know, Bill got the vision and obeyed the Lord to do NASCA. I mean, it's just infinite how much help people have gotten and are still getting, you know, from this organization. And I just praise God for it.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I always get this vision that, you know, all of these kids just crying out to God saying, where's the help at? Where's the help at? And your organization is one of those that people go to because I'm on the Facebook pages and I see and I read the pain. And just to have that outlet to share is one thing, but to have that support and reinforcement and to know, you know, a person can vent, a person can just kind of say, hey, I'm having a tough day processing it. And your Facebook pages are really lifelines to so many people. So I'm very grateful that God gave Bill the vision and that he fulfilled that calling because right now I think it's so needed.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to be quiet so somebody else can be called on.
Okay. Well, Bill is actually next in line here. Hold on a second. Yeah. Okay, Bill, your mic is open. Is there something you'd like to say or ask?
Well, I'm also grateful for the people. You know, NASCA is about people. And it's about survivors who themselves are willing to share their experience, strength, and hope. Without our community, which we call the NASCA family, there wouldn't be a NASCA, because you can do all the work in the world, and it can just sit there. But I tell you, this is, Atina's right, this is a very active community. It doesn't sit around. And frankly, over the years, you know, as people discover NASCA, they're excited because they never had, like you said, Carol, they never had a place before. You know, they never had a voice before. And this is kind of new, relatively new. I mean, when you think about it, 15 and 20 years ago, there wasn't anything like this. You know, now there's a couple others too, but I think we're kind of unique in how we do it and all the tools and the fact that it's completely free and it all happens through the internet and phones and so forth. So it's available to everybody. But that's my, you know, that's my take on it. And I really appreciate Tina coming on tonight to tell her story, because that's what helps the next person decide, hey, maybe if she tells her story, it's okay for me to tell mine. And especially identifying with the feelings that Tina experienced and still experiences, you know, experienced as a child when she was going through it, yes, but then in adulthood, the kind of the trauma is produces a kind of a confusion, a loneliness, separate from everybody else. And now in recovery, fortunately, we have a place to identify with each other. So, you know, Tina, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for your testimony. And we really appreciate your, you know, your active participation in NASCA, because it doesn't happen just because people join. It happens because people get involved. So thank you, Tina, very much.
Well, my pleasure. And I think you hit on something which is so powerful. And I think that is the fact that it's okay, right, to talk about it. I mean, it's not our fault. It was never our fault. But NASCA gives us the opportunity to let everybody know, hey, it's okay to share our thoughts. It's okay to share our pain. And most importantly, it's okay to share our experience, because we're not alone. There are a million of adults who have suffered from sexual abuse. So I think it's a beautiful, like you said, a family. And that is, you know, in family you love and you support and you help. But to me, just to be able to say, hey, you know, it's okay, you know, and it's beautiful to have that support. You know, when I look at the Facebook pages, I'm like, wow, this is so cool, because you can interact with people and encourage people and, you know, just tell them, hey, have a good day, you know, and God be with you, or just, you know, be encouraged. But just to give those type of daily messages, I think it's just so, so cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you again your testimony and your, you know, you're telling people that you believe in us. I'm sorry, Carol, go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with her. That's all. It's I've had many people mention our Facebook pages. I just want you to know that. And at times I do go on there, and I'm always on the phone, or I do go there at times. Also, you know, with the Facebook pages, people look forward to it. They're looking for help, and this is something that NASCA is able to give them. Okay, and then of course if we can't help them, then we do send them to, you know, to programs. We do have programs, and that's a wonderful thing that was actually made, because I send people to programs all the time, and that's on our website, okay? Under the first one on the left-hand side, under the red box, you'll see programs. And, you know, if you look at that, it's self-explanatory, but you can always call me, and I'll guide you right through it. You go right to your state, you go to your the county that you live in or the town that you live in, whichever way it supplies, and you can find groups right there too. So people have much more help now, Tina. Okay, may I call you Tina?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Have much more help today than they did 10 years ago when I wrote my book. And I've been on this show for almost 11 years come June. Another show before that. So certainly back then, It was very few and far in between, and not at all many times satisfactory. Okay, so we've come a long ways in the last 10 years. So let me go down. Thank you for that, Bill. I'm going to go down to Peter from Ontario and see if he wants to listen more, what he wants to do.
G'day, everybody. Peter. Good evening. First of all, happy International Women's Month. It's a blessing to know that the women out there can do a lot more than what us men can do, just as much as what a male can do. But happy Women's Month, and the more women that come out of the woodworks to do what we do, then the more the merrier. So, G'day, Dr. Medina. It's Peter here from Ontario, Canada. I agree what you were saying, and I pretty much agree with what everyone's saying. More stuff needs to come out in regards to how kids today are either treated or how things should be dealt with. Like in the law, that law in the law enforcement needs to be increased in regards to sexual pedophiles and to protect the children. I mean, I very much agree what Penelope said to me that she posted, that we need more of it. There's so much more that out there that we need to find out in regards to people who do crime, but it doesn't pay for them because they get themselves scot-free. And I'm also like a survivor from sexual molestation, and Carol knows very much what I've discussed with her, it's a pity that a person can be accused for something that you have no intention to in doing, but a person who faces court this past Monday gets away scot-free for an attempt of luring a 16-year-old, luring a minor under 16, and also explicit material, and gets a slap on the wrist with a peace bond. How does that work? I mean, I can't imagine how that child's feeling. And I said to my wife Michelle, that's not fair. Carol, I've mentioned to you what I've gone through a couple of years ago, and I think you know where I'm getting at here, Carol.
Yes, and I do.
That I just happen to be a person that gets accused for something that I didn't have no intention of doing, but then the likes of people like this person in our own town, you might as well just give each criminal a slap on the wrist and say, be a good boy, we'll give you a peace bond. The blood is boiling at the very moment, I agree what everyone's saying, that more stuff needs to come out, more help, more support. And I think up here in Ontario need that too. I wish there was a way that it can be done. I don't know. Does it have to come through with the government or the health department? I have no idea. But, I would like to see a lot more here in Ontario. I mean, NASCAR, since I've been with you guys, it's been fabulous. I've enjoyed myself. I'm able to reach out to you guys, you, Bill, Pamela, you, Carol, and listening to other people's stories, it gives me that insight. I get a few triggers now and then, but I try my best to ground myself and try and follow through. Sometimes it fails, but sometimes it doesn't. And I appreciate everyone at NASCAR of bringing me into the organization to be part of who I am as a survivor. So, but I think more support, and I totally agree. Thank you.
Well, you're quite welcome, Peter. And you know what? You're going to find as time goes by, the more you hear from other people, the more people speak to you from NASCAR, I'm speaking about right now, because we are survivors. All the things that you've been through, okay, it's going to help you. And the day is going to come, where you can move forward and not look back as much as you do now, because we've all been through that. That's all a part of the healing journey, okay? And and you're going to feel a lot stronger, and you'll be able to help someone someday, you know, when you're ready, and who's in a similar situation. And that's what NASCAR does, okay? We were all way back on the healing journey. The healing journey, there's no time limit for anyone. You know, everyone heals at their own pace, okay? And you're coming along because you're speaking now, and that's very, very good. So anytime you need to talk, you know my number, okay? Okay. Thank you for that. Let's go down to Mark here.
Yes, good evening. I just wanted to say everything you guys were saying earlier about NASCAR. It is a great vehicle for people to share their stories. And believe me, because I listen in with Pam when she's talking with people and text messages and Messenger. And there are so many people that haven't heard, but they are excited about this opportunity to share their story. And, you know, and even when she talks to people, they're excited. They just can't believe there's something like this. So, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of people on the list coming up that Pam's been in touch with to get on the show to tell their story. They're excited. And I don't know what 10 years ago was like, but it seems like just being a part of this short time, there are a lot of people that are starting to open up, a lot of people who, like you said, writing books, a lot of people wanting to share their story. And from what I've learned in the past few months, the more you share your story, the more power you feel inside, the more encouraged you are to get past the pain and then start even becoming an advocate, becoming a help to others. And I think that's what, you know, it relates in scriptures that God heals you so that you can be a witness and a healing to others. And that's what I think NASCAR is all about. And I would encourage people who are listening in, come in and tell your story. This is a great vehicle to start sharing your story, start getting on the path to healing and the journey and get set free, you know, and be able to help others as well.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Thank you so much for that, Mark. And it's so true. Because when you first start out, you know, on NASCAR, you're very shaky many times. People are very nervous. They think people are going to judge them. They don't realize that this is a platform, you know, for the beginning of actually the healing journey. And you can tell your stories many other places. And I encourage people to do that, all right, to tell your story, because that's the way it gets out. It gets out there by people, you know, doing presentations, telling their story, whichever way, their art. There's all different kinds of things that we do. And so, you know, but as we move along, as we do these things, if we're able to, okay, you know, healing comes to us. It comes to us. It makes us stronger, which you hit upon, and that's quite right. You know, let's go back to Tina here. Tina, what do you think about all of this? You know, I want to ask you something. When you, would you say it was 87? What year? 97. What year did you become a born again Christian? I forget what year you told me.
97.
Now, when you first started out, did you feel? How were you feeling about yourself and about what happened to you? Tell us a little bit about how you felt even as a child. Let's go back a little further. When these things were happening to you as a child, because remember, people are listening in that don't understand child abuse that much, and they feel that they're a freak or something because they have all kinds of strange feelings about themselves even. How did you feel as a child when you were being abused? Were you frightened, or how did you feel?
Yeah, I felt very nervous, and I felt very afraid, and I was very anxious, and I was not really confident, and it was just like walking on eggshells, and it wasn't a good place to be. And although academically I did okay in school, but I think that nervousness kind of carried over for a long time. And it wasn't until I had to process my own pain and kind of when I started to write, you begin to, you know, deal with all of those insecurities. And so as a little girl, I was very nervous all the time. And nobody kind of knew because we were always in this, you know, mother's sick and my father had his businesses and was working. And so we always had this really, you know, busy lifestyle. But I was nervous. And like I said, even to this day, I wake up when I wake up. You know, I don't like to be woken up because sometimes I could, you know, like if someone yells my name, that may make me wake up and kind of, you know, get a little, you know what I mean? You're just frightened because it just brings back so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It absolutely does. Absolutely. That's hypervigilance. That's what that is. And hypervigilance can follow you around. Just like wherever you go, it goes right with you. And people who are hypervigilant are more apt to be startled people, okay? You can startle them easily. So if you're in a sound sleep, yeah. And if you're in a sound sleep, and I don't know, did your uncle come to you when you were sleeping? Or
yes.
Since this is a startling?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he would wake me up. And he would, I would be woken up to him trying to sexually stimulate me. And it would scare me, right? I mean, I would be frightened and I would like kind of scream and then everyone, my sister would hear me and then everyone would just, you know what I mean? It was kind of like he would stop. And then what was really weird was, and it was really a blessing in disguise, he called me like, the last time it occurred, he called me like maybe 3 months later and he apologized on the phone and he said it would never happen again and it never did. But then like in 2000, and it had to be, I think, 2015, when my aunt was dying, he called me and asked, both him and my aunt asked me to go to the hospital to see my aunt. And I said, no. I'm not going. And then he would call me and say, you know what, she's dying. We need you to be here. And I would say, no, I'm not going. And then finally, when my aunt passed away, I made a conscious decision not to go to the funeral. And then there was a time that it had to be like maybe 3 weeks after she passed away. He literally came to my home and in the driveway and he was honking. His car, and I looked outside and it was him, and I just froze like a little 10-year-old again. But the difference from then until now, or at that time, I called my sister and I called my aunt and I said, you know, tell him to leave. He has 5 minutes or I'm going to call the police. Mm-hmm. And, he left, but the beauty of that whole testimony was that I used my voice, right, to call my sister, to call my aunt, and to reach out and to have them intercede and to help, because either way, I was going to call the police. And so that's just kind of a journey, right, to let you know, from the little 10-year-old that couldn't say anything to the 40-year-old that you know, called and reached out. And I think that shows that, you know, with strength and prayer and going through, like you said, the process, the journey, we can now use our mouths and say, hey, I need help here because, I don't want anything to do with you anymore, right? There's no relationship there.
Absolutely, yeah. That must have been hard around holidays, and I don't know if your family gathered together. My monsters, I call them monsters, they were, you know, many times around the table, and also sexually abused outside of the family, but I think inside the family is worse because you have to look at them. They're in your house, and they're there, and then there you are too, I don't want to make eye contact. I want to look down to the ground because I feel dirty. I feel and frightened. You know,
correct.
Because this person
correct.
Took such advantage of me.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and there's a real dysfunctionalism that comes with the whole family dynamics because, like you said, I agree with the word monsters because when we think about family, we don't think about the misuse of trust and the sexual abuse that occurs. But yeah, there are monsters in a lot of families. And part of that whole, the freedom is to realize, hey, it wasn't my fault. They have the problem. And let's put things in perspective because, again, they're the perpetrators, right? They are the pedophiles. We are the survivors. And it takes a lot to realize that, but also then, hey, it was never my fault, right? I had nothing, I didn't bring this on. And then, like you said, to go and start that journey, you know, one step at a time. And I commend you, Carol, on your book because I think you and Bill have been pioneers in helping myself and others, you know, have the vehicle to be encouraged to write our own book. And just to, you know, because I know the first time that I met Bill, I think it was either 2015 or 14. And I just have, again, such great admiration for you two and the organization because I consider you pioneers to help us. And like you said, to help the other person, you know, like it's like one hand reaching out saying, hey, I can help you. And then us saying, yeah, you know, let's help that other person because it takes a lot of strength and a lot of, I think, of the Spirit of the Lord to help us be here and talk about these things.
Mm-hmm. It does take a lot of strength. I always tell people, you know, it takes strength, it takes guts. You know, to be able to get out there and say, hey, look, this is what happened to me. Not looking for sympathy, okay, but to get the word out. And you know, it's by doing so, then someone had mentioned earlier, then maybe you would, you know, make another person tell their story, give them the strength, give them the courage, which it takes. It takes courage to tell your story. I went to a book club once. Only once. And I had just written my book, and it was published and so forth. Or no, it wasn't quite published yet. I take that back. I was going there to find out how to publish it because I never thought, you know, that I was actually going to go through with the thought of writing my book. So I didn't investigate. I didn't do anything, okay? I just sat down. It took me 28 days to write 314 pages to write my book. And I felt totally detached from it. Yeah. I felt totally detached from it. But I went to this book club, and, you know, I was a new person, okay, that it was joining. I thought I was going to join this book club. And so I had to stand up in front of all these people. It was a large book club. It was over in Pennsylvania and in a library, and it's a lot of room, a lot of people. Well, people were writing about their dogs. They're writing about their cats. Okay, they're writing about flowers, you know, vacations, all the nice things in life. And then it came time for me to stand up, okay? Well, I was the only one that spoke about child abuse. And there wasn't one sound in the room. Not one sound. Now,
yeah.
after the end of that meeting, not one person approached me. Not one. You see, there's such a big change today because
yes.
people are talking about it, okay? And even Hollywood has spoken about it, you know, how they had to get ahead and do things in order to get different parts or better parts and things like that. But even outside of Hollywood now, we have people all over the place, you know, that are speaking. But we need everyone to speak. We do know that there's over 60 million adult survivors of child abuse. And that's just a number. But because we also know that many people never tell. Okay, they go to their grave that way, and they have
Correct.
Such terrible dysfunctional lives and very sad lives many times, and that's a shame. So did you ever, how did you handle your anger? Did you have anger with your uncle? We know you had fear. Did you have anger? What did you have? I mean, how did you get your mind off of what was happening to you? What was your outlet?
Well, I wrote, I had a journal, and I continue to journal today, and I believe in, I'm a big person in writing therapy, but once I told my father and I told my family, I really felt such a relief, and I prayed a lot, but I want to say that it was like I think in 97, it was like God put me on the path to deal with this from spiritually, and to get that spiritual support. And I talked to a lot of ministers that were very, very helpful and supportive of me. And, there is the deliverance process that the Pentecostals will practice. And I've participated in that. And that was very, very helpful to me. But to be honest, a lot of times when I was writing my very first book about how to help adults, I would cry, you know. So there was a lot of tears being shed as I wrote that book. So it was like a release. And I believe in people, you know, crying and using terms like if they want to cuss, you know, when they're disclosing. I think when people disclose, we should give them the creative freedom. Right, that if they want to use cuss words, or if they want to demonstrate their anger through words or art or poetry or rap, you know, to give them that vehicle, because freedom is needed, right? To get someone to disclose is very, very important, because you are so right. There are going to be people, there's going to be people that will never tell their story, right? And it could be because they don't ever trust anyone. Right, they don't want to deal with the public or family shame and pain. And then there's going to be people who really feel like they can't tell their story, right? They just don't have that inner strength to tell their story. So either they can't or trust, or they're just not ready. And so that's my whole goal right now, is to, you know, kind of reach out to people and say, okay, we already know these things. You may not trust anybody, right? You may not ever want to disclose, but can you at least consider, you know, maybe watching a little television show or getting a book to at least help you deal and address where you're at today? Because I do believe, like you said, if that person never gets the opportunity to process their pain, they can't keep it, right? It would be a very unproductive life to keep all that pain and all that anger and all that hurt. So I'm really big these days into telling people, okay, let's try to process your pain, right? We have a little television show that we do, and we just kind of minister to people on the subject. And we know these things, and we're like, okay, if you don't ever want to talk to us, then maybe you'll sit down and listen to a television show or a radio program. You know, at least offer those tools.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's really good. That's good. And the more we encourage people, you know, to move forward, to tell your story, and to get to the point, you know, if you need a therapist, that's fine. You know, I always want people to understand, you know, that people at times do need therapists, and certainly make sure that they understand child abuse, okay? Otherwise, you're wasting your time, and they're wasting their time, and you probably won't, you know, benefit from it. And so there's all different ways that people, you know, start on their healing journey. And some do it through AA, some do it through, you know, the church like you and I both did. Some do it through therapy, you know, which is fine. And I had a little bit of therapy myself. And I was told it was never my fault. At least those people were smart. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so that made me feel a lot better and so forth and so on. They told me that I should go out and spread the word and do the right thing and counsel people that are hurting. So this is what we do. And maybe we have to go through, you know, what we went through. Not that I want to go through it again. Don't get me wrong, okay? But it made us stronger. And knowledgeable, too. Let's go to the panel here. Hold on a second. Let's go to Pamela. Okay, Pam, go ahead.
Hi, Carol. Hi, Dr. Medina. You know, my background is I have a master's in social work also with an intensive care nurse. And one of the things and I was sexually abused from the age of 4 to 18. My mother married a pedophile, knew he was a pedophile when she married him, and she pimped me to him. And so, you know, I found out while I was going to school that grieving over the loss of our sexual childhood innocence is part of healing. It's actually the start of healing. And without that, you can only go so far, okay, is what I found in my own life. That's my personal experience. But what I'm starting to see a trend is we're starting to talk more about emotions, okay? And, you know, as a child, I remember I couldn't have emotions. Can you imagine being a child and never being allowed to have emotions? That's what that monster did to me. Day in and day out, he would beat us girls with the belt, a thick belt, and then he wouldn't let us cry, you know, and then we couldn't think for ourselves and we couldn't have our own emotions. And so I figured that when I got older, you know, I could cry as much as I wanted to. And God even took me through a period of time when I was healing that all I could do was just cry out, you know, and it lasted a while. And I was reading that there's a benefit to crying, and I didn't know that.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it's not – people see it as a sign of weakness, right? I don't know why our culture or society, you know, they start seeing tears. The first thing to do is hand you a tissue, right? And what does that say? Stop your crying or whatever, you know? And crying is part of us. Crying is part of being a human being, you know? And so one more thing is that I found when doing some research that it helps to relieve pain. It enhances mood, releases toxins, and releases stress. I mean, we have not done enough research and therapy on crying. I think we should have crying therapy. But I think a therapy called emotion focus therapy.
Correct.
So do you have anything to say about that?
No, I'm a big crier. When I would do counseling in the technical school, there would be kids that would come in and they would start to cry. And they wouldn't say anything. They just would say, I need to talk to you. And they would start crying. And I would say, I'm not going to say anything. Go ahead and let it out. And so I'm a big, big supporter of crying. I believe crying is a release of pain. I believe crying is an outlet, and crying is just a really good form of pain relief. And I believe you're right. Our society, America and the world is very dysfunctional when it comes to recognizing pain, right? We don't recognize pain. And most importantly, if we can't recognize it, then we can't process it. And our culture does not, we're very plastic in the sense that when we say, hey, how are you? Our response is supposed to be, well, I'm fine. Well, my response sometimes is, I'm not fine. I'm processing some pain and I'm processing some issues. So I may be in a place where I may cry. So I'm a very big encourager of people, because I know when I wrote my book, I started to cry. And I just said, let's just let it out, right? Give yourself the liberty to cry and just, you know, release your tears, because it's okay. And when I do therapy now, I'm like, okay, when they start crying, I'm like, take this opportunity and cry and let it go. And they do, and it's a beautiful thing, because you're right. We're not, how can I say this, our level of care, sincere care, we need to get better in that area. We really do, because I'm working on a book right now on how to recognize pain and how to process it. And the whole goal is, we got to stop the madness of our daily lives to realize I still have some aftermath of whether it's sexual abuse or the loss of my mother. It's okay. Let's recognize it. And it's okay to even take a breath and know that I'm still on the journey. Like you said, Carol, I'm still on the journey. So it's time to recognize it. And if we need to cry some more and write some more, and let's process it. Because once we then can process it, then we're on a different level of healing. And I write resumes. And let me just share with you, I have customers that will come to me and say, I chose you to be my resume writer because I was sexually abused too, Tina, and I can identify with you, and I know you're going to help me. And I'm like, that's beautiful. You know, so right. I'm with you. I think we need to dig deeper, right? Because when we dig deeper, we can really deal with those root issues. And there's a word that I learned this year. It's called marpe. And it is the deepest of all healing that God has to offer. It's a Hebrew word, and it means like a total sevenfold restoration. So I fell in love with that word, marpe, but I'll sum it all up. I think when we recognize our pain, we can process it, and we dig deeper in our soul to get, you know, ask God or the Holy Spirit to help, and with therapy, whether that's traditional, holistic, or faith-based, then we can get more of that marpe to then understand and be able to help that next person and say, hey, it's okay to cry. Feel free to cry. Right. You may need to cry.
Yeah. You know, and even yeah. I had that happen actually today. Somebody I talked to, and I just thought we were going to talk about light things, but she had a lot of tears to let go, and I was like, cry it out. But, you know, as I was saying that, I'm sitting here thinking, Pam, that's so not normal. You know, I'm sitting here and I'm not able to process what I'm saying, but I know I need to say it. Is that weird or not? It's like a dissonance, you know. It's like, you know, a dissonance is you can't have two beliefs at the same time. So I can't believe it on one end or one side that crying's okay, and then believe it the other, since I was raised, crying's not okay. I have to choose a side, right? Otherwise, I'm torn.
Well, and I think, think about it. When we were little kids, let's say we scraped our knee. Maybe we needed to cry, and someone said, oh, you can't cry about that, but I'm hurting, right? I think America and the world has suppressed their pain. And we really all need to cry, right? I think we were told the wrong thing to do. And instead of saying, hey, I'm in pain and I need to cry, and I need to process this, and I need to work this out, because there are times now that I still may miss my mother. And if I take a little, you know, maybe 3 minutes and cry about it, that's okay. Because, again, like we said, we're emotional creatures, right? We're social creatures. And so let's embrace that. Let's embrace that maybe America and our socialization process may not have been that comforting and that loving.
Okay. I'm going to be quiet now because I see that time's going down and,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I thank you for that, Pamela. That brought up a really heavy subject because I think so many of us are not allowed to cry, okay? I certainly wasn't allowed to cry. And in fact, if I cried when I was a child in the house, they would just simply pick me up and put me outside. And if it was 2 degrees out, that's where I was. And, you know, so that's why I was able to write my book without any emotion. And just quickly, one day I knew that this was not right. You know, this is after I wrote my book, mind you, because I didn't have any emotion about what had happened, except for anger. But I didn't have sadness, you see. I wasn't allowed to feel that pain. So I laid down on the bed, and I started to think about the worst thing of all the sexual abuses that I had to go through and physical abuses, what I considered to be the worst. And I thought about it, and I thought about it, and finally, and I do mean finally, I was able to release those tears, and I started to bawl. I started to really, really cry. And I never did it again. But at least I got it out. Okay.
Absolutely.
And
I mean, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Because,
well,
see,
you know,
I
felt better. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's a release. We have to think about it. If I can't release, that's why I use artistic methods, whether it's writing, drawing, poetry, rap, and crying. We need to let that negative emotion and those hurt feelings out, right? We have to release them. We have to let them go. And let me ask you this, Carol. How did you feel mm-hmm. after you cried?
I had a headache, but outside, I tease a lot, but I did have a headache. But after that, I felt some release. You know, many times people sit with their shoulders way up to their neck. They don't realize it. And all of a sudden, I felt my shoulders go down as I was sitting on the bed, and I actually felt more at peace because I had finally let out all of that sadness.
Yeah.
Sadness. And there is, because our childhoods are taken from us. We may function. You may have been able to go to school and concentrate. But there's so many of us that got into alcohol and drugs and other things out on the street. I was out on the street. My mother said she didn't care. My brother was, you know, abusing me and actually ended up raping me at the age of 14. I said, that's it. Didn't care anyway. So away I went. So I was out on the street, and so all these things, you know, it was very, very sad, and so I chose the most sad thing that happened to me, which I'm not going to put on air right now, and I felt somewhat better, and I realized it's okay to cry.
Yes, it is. It is. I'm a big,
okay.
I will cry. Like, I cry if. That something bothers me, I will cry. And I've been in a professional setting that if I, you know, if I get really, and I rarely get really emotional, but if I'm passionate about something, I will say, hey, you know, this is not right. You know what I mean? And this is not good. But there's been instances that I will cry and people will, you know, just kind of look at me and I'm like, give me my moment, right? Let me process this because you evidently hit a chord or I just feel really strong about it and I'll cry and they'll like, okay. And I'm like, I'm not going to stop crying. Right. Because I need to process this. And so they'll generally give me my little time that I need, but I encourage people to cry because I don't think it's healthy to not express that emotion. And I think whether again, art, rap, painting, writing, we have to have that creative outlet and that outlet to release that pain and that hurt and that deep-rooted trauma, because it has to, at one point or another, be let go, so then the Holy Spirit or that freshness of healing can begin.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. And with me, all right, I didn't cry again after that, not about the things that happened to me. But instead I turned to becoming an athlete in school. I won awards, and that was fine, you know. And I used to jump the hurdles, for God's sake. I was doing really good. Yes, I was, you know. And that felt, that empowered me. I felt like I was going 60 miles an hour or something with my legs, you know. It felt good to get out there and to run, to feel free, to be able to breathe, to be able to breathe. We have Sharonda from North Carolina. She's joined the show. And I just want her to know that, where'd you go? Well, there you are. Yeah, your mic is open now. Hi, how are you?
I am great. Good evening, ladies.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Yes. I don't know if you've been listening or what, but we have Dr. Tina Medina here tonight. And she's a very good guest. She's doing a fine job. And we're speaking about, you know, being able to cry right now. And I noticed that you've been on for, what, I don't know, 4 minutes or something, and I wanted to bring you on. Have you ever cried about the things that have happened to you? Are you able to cry?
Awesome discussion. I really wish I had caught it earlier. I was working, but I caught enough. And I can honestly say I'm not a crier, per se.
Mm-hmm.
When I think back in childhood, just like you said, you know, if you were crying, you would kind of basically like ridicule, you know, ignored or kind of, you know, put out. Same here. In my home, it was not a, didn't see a lot of emotions. So I guess even in adulthood, it's hard for me to release. Being that you lady
yeah.
said that, so a good topic. I hate that I didn't catch her earlier.
Yeah,
yeah, I do
yeah.
notice that I didn't, and it's not that I don't care for people and everything. Just far as just tears, I just don't. Not
well,
often.
You and I are the same way, Sharonda, because I explained that I had to force myself. Thinking of the worst
yeah.
thing that happened, okay. And
yeah.
it actually happened, and a holy crow. I mean, you know, then I realized it was okay to cry, and then I went more into the athletic field where I would run. I was a runner, and things like that to release even more of the anger, the anguish, the pain, just feeling a feeling of freedom. So I think it's a good thing to cry, and I think it's cleansing, and I wasn't afforded that either. If I was crying in the house, I was put outside in 2-degree weather one time it was. They didn't care. And I didn't have a jacket on either. And the snow was taller than me. This is in Staten Island, New York, and the snow was taller than me. I remember that.
Wow.
And, but so I did sneak into the house and grab my jacket, and I went back out. I didn't do that. But
wow.
I think crying is a good release. It's a good form of release for people. Yeah. And I sort of like envy it, you know, when people can actually cry. I mean, I feel love. I'm able to love. I'm able to have anger. I'm able to have other emotions. And feelings, but when it comes to crying, you know, what did we grow up with? Nah, 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 you're crying, baby, baby,
exactly.
All this other silly stuff,
yes.
you know, or you get
yes.
a smack in the head, you know, I'll give you something to cry about, okay? So
yes,
it
ma'am.
Seemed like when we grew up in the ages that we grew up in, you know, I think it was always like that. It's a part of our culture, like the doctor was saying. It's a part of our culture, you know, where we're not allowed to express ourselves in tears. And when I see someone crying, I envy him. I really do. Okay, we'll get back to you. Let's up going from the bottom up. I just want you to know that I recognize that you're here. Okay, and
thank you.
Let's go to you bet. And then we're going to get into after this. We're going to get into what she's doing today, because she has written books, and one is also for preschoolers. I'm always interested in that, and because that's when a lot of times the abuse starts. So I'll talk to you in a little while. Okay.
Thank you.
Mark. Okay, go ahead, Mark. Do you have something you want to say?
Well, yes. I think you guys answered my question before, you got to me about crying. I think Pam and Dr. Tina and you answered that question, because that was going to be my question. What about crying? What about, did it help? And knowing Pam these past, all this life with her, the crying I've learned is good, and I just wanted to get, your guys' opinion as well. And it seems that it is a beneficial thing. And I'm reminded of, even in the scriptures and Psalms, I think it says that God collects our tears. And and then we know one day that he's going to wipe away our tears. So it must be, it doesn't bother God that you cry. It's not an offense, but it's something healthy. And I guess he gave it to us to, like Pam said, to cleanse, to bring out the inner junk and bring it forth and let it out. So you answered my question. I kind of knew, but, knowing that three people that understand it real well from your point of view, it makes sense. And that's why I think even the people listening, don't feel like you're being a sissy or weak because you cry. It's important to cry. It's important to release that crap that's in you. And if that's the way it is, then it's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's even, when we cry, it's okay to even say, I'm hurt, right? Or I'm upset, or this is bothering me. And it's bothering me so much that I either need to journal about it and cry about it. Because think about how in our society we're kind of socialized to be really strong and assertive and professional, but yet we're still human. And I think the ability to say, again, let's be honest, my God, let's be honest with ourselves and say, something has upset me, and I'm gonna again recognize it and process it. And if I need to cry, I need to love myself enough to give me the freedom to cry about it and release it and let it go. And it's okay to do that.
Amen.
Amen. And it doesn't matter whether you're a girl or a guy. You see, so often with the men, especially with men, if they're caught crying, and I have to see what I just said, if they're caught crying, I'm so processed that way, but if they're caught crying, if they cry, then they're considered, like you said, Mark, like sissy-ish or something, like a man up, man up, what's the matter with you, dude? You're not supposed to be crying, you're a man, so... it's sad because men have emotions too. They have happiness, they have a lot of joy, but they also have sadness, and I think it's just a human thing to do. And so often we are denied that, and I do believe that the doctor is right. It is like a cultural thing, because we are taught to be tough. I was taught to be tough. I learned how to be tough, because if I didn't, I would have died. That I was a survivor. And was no time for tears in my life. No. But I felt better after I did one time. Yeah. Go ahead.
When we were kids, as kids growing up, boys, I don't know. I don't recall any of being actually taught not to cry. But like you said, it's a cultural thing. We just, if you cried, you were a big baby. And we just, from the young age of, whatever you started, 5, 6 years old on up, the boys in the neighborhood, you didn't cry. it just wasn't, feasible, And I don't know if I don't remember ever really being taught that, that you got, you're a guy, you can't cry, but it just happened. It's just the way it was. But, you know, as you get older and what you're saying here tonight, crying is good, and maybe, you know, boys should be let be able to cry when they're younger, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think so.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much for that, Mark. Let's go to Peter and see if he ever cried. I don't know. Let's find out. Peter, did you ever cry when you were a kid and there was all that stuff going on?
Just like what Mark was saying, you know, that, you know, and I've heard you say it too, Carol, and, you know, when I was a kid, you know, my, you know, if I was crying, my father would say, you know, got something to cry about, I'll give you something to cry about, and he'll either whack me over the back of the head or to make me cry even more, or I, you know, as that child, it was the you know, it would be more of a screaming, murdering cry because, you know, trying to hope that anyone was going to hear. And, you know, even when I was involved in sport, I never got the support. But he would my father would punish me because I would be crying because I got injured in soccer. And, you know, like, you call that a sprained ankle? I'll give you a sprained ankle. And, you know, the crying back then as a kid is just, it was more threat and fear. Now, with the abuse, that I received that had upon me, there was no emotion. To me, I feel it was more like terror, you know. But like in today now, the only time I'll show, I still won't show emotion from my abuse. I try and try. I will fight and fight to some way to have something that's going to spark to set me off, but it won't happen. But I could, you know, and I do believe I've shared this with some of you guys. But, you know, Dr. Tina, you know, I also am a reborn Christian. And I've never been humiliated or bullied after a performance that I did with my church. I took part in our Easter production at my former church, and the whole story, we all know what happened on Good Friday, where Jesus was crucified on the cross. My part was a disciple. We were at the table having the Last Supper. I could not stop crying. I don't know what it was, but something just of power that came to me, knowing this is it. Why is this man suffering for us? What the hell did I do wrong? And this man is suffering for us. And then seeing him get put up on the cross, it sent chills down my spine. And then he rose. And when he rose from the dead, it was like, wow. But after my production, my former partner that I was living with in Windsor, she humiliated me. She bullied me. She said, I have never seen such a sook. It's only a production. It's only a play that you're doing. If you experience of doing the play to get the reality, it's, oh boy, it is reality. I've seen the Bible. I've seen and watched the Bible, the Son of God. And, you know, I was happy to have that family with the church there when I did that production. I still will never forget doing that production, sitting around at that table for the Last Supper, seeing him getting crucified, getting whipped. You know, it's that was my kind of emotion. I can get emotional on that kind of stuff, but when it comes to my abuse, I can't show that emotion. And I think Carol has said this to me, I think, and I've had my counselor said to me, it's more of anger. I have a lot of anger issues that's building up, but needs to be released. How? I don't know. But when it comes to Christianity, what I enjoy doing, like last Sunday, I cried for our doing communion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speechless. I just feel
okay. That's good,
yeah.
Though, Peter. We have to get into a book series. But
sorry.
What you're doing is you're feeling. No, you're doing fine. What you're feeling is the passion of Jesus. Okay, this is what you're feeling. And this is what we're taught. Yes, and this is what we're taught. And you're looking at it in such a, what's the word I would want to use, in such a way. But remember, it was God's will for his son. And we can't even comprehend as a people, you know, why God would want his son to go through all of this. And yet it was a process, and that was because it was going to win over the dark side, the devil, okay? And because Jesus did die for our sins. So all this had to be, you know, we had to go through all of this. He had to go through all of this. And but remember that something good did come from it. So I understand what you're saying. Now let's go to, because we're running out of time here. You have written here, thank you for that, Peter. I understand where you're coming from. It says, my book series explain how God is capable of healing the wounded spirit of a sexual abuse victim. I have a book for preschoolers. Talk to me about the preschoolers.
Carol.
Yeah.
Carol.
Yeah.
This is Pamela. You didn't go to Bill.
No, well, Bill says that he can't listen, okay? So that's why I skipped over him. Because he said he can't listen. We have enough people on the panel. We have enough people on the panel. And because we're running out of time, okay, let's get to her book series. And for heaven's sake, let's speak about book for preschoolers. Go ahead.
Okay. In 2010, I had a mother reach out to me because her little boy was 6 years old when he was sexually assaulted, and she asked if I had any kid-friendly material, and my response to her was I did not, and she's like, well, my little son, whose name is Marcus, is trying to ask me, you know, why did God allow this to happen? And she goes, you know, Tina, I don't know how to answer it. Can you help me in this process? And I felt like, oh my God, you know, this is God, you know, again, knocking on my heart. And I had a team, myself and Wendy Carr, and I said, do you think we could write a book for a little kid to understand why me? And he was going through his catechism CCD classes, and he was learning about God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit. And that's a serious question, you know, for a kid to ask a mother. And so I felt like, okay, let's write Why Me? And that was a kid's book. And then about 2 years later, a little 3-year-old that I knew was raped. And so, again, the family said, how do we, you know, begin to deal with this whole, you know, situation in a kid-like, you know, very understandable, friendly manner that's going to be very loving and caring and compassionate. And so that's where Can Jesus Help Me came from, and that's the preschooler book. And it's designed for a parent to read the book through to the child so they get an understanding of the basic terminology, but most importantly, that they know, like Peter was saying, you know, he had that aha, Jesus can help me moment, right? When you realize, oh my God, he died on the cross for me. And so that's where the preschool book came from. And then why me? And I'm not married. I don't have any children. And so to me, in both of those instances, I really felt like God was just knocking on my heart to write for little kids, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, Jesus loves the children. And, you know, you're not supposed to touch and you're not supposed to hurt the children because you're just not supposed to do that. And if you do, it's like having, you know, the milestone around your neck and going into the sea, because, I mean, Jesus was very clear, you know, don't stop the children from coming to me. But Jesus loves children. And there's a story there, you know, that mm-hmm. Jesus' heart is for kids. And we need to be able to minister to kids in a very simplistic but very loving manner. And again, I think why me, I wrote why me for Marcus, but part of it was for the little 10-year-old girl, to give the 10-year-old a book and say, hey, you know, begin the journey, right? Let's not wait till you're 32. Let's start this journey now. And let's just begin the healing process. And I have created the healing alphabet. And it goes from A to Z, and like A for authority. You know, you have the authority to, you know, pray and the ability and the authority to know your feelings and emotions.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, children are a gift from God, okay? And it,
yeah.
it makes it very clear, you know, in the Bible that children are a gift from God. And yes, as you say, I remember seeing pictures. My Bibles will have pictures in them. I like that. But I have one called The Way from the 70s. I love that Bible. But anyway, Jesus said, come, you know, to the children to come to him, and they should be able to come to him because he does love them. We're not supposed to abuse our children. But, you know, this is horrible.
No. Oh yeah, it's a societal problem. I mean, it is a tragedy. It's criminal. It's
yeah.
a tragedy. It's sickening. I mean, that it is not good.
No,
I mean,
it's
perverse. It's sexual perversion, and it's the worst of all crimes because it affects little kids that do not know what's going on. They're not, they're babies. They're immature. They're innocent. And to hurt innocent children is not good.
Well, then, too, I mean, I've had many times people say to me, well, if there's a God, then why does he allow for this to happen and for that to happen? My answer to them is I feel it should be, I don't know, is that God gave us free will. This is how
Correct.
We differ from the animals, all right? So because he did give us this free will, we're either going to be good people or going to be bad people. And even if you're a bad person, you can become a good person. You can.
Correct.
Okay. If you start in, you know, following the right paths. And this is not really a religious show, but people out there who are abusing their children, you have to go before God, you know, when it's your turn to die. And the Lord is going to judge you. It's as simple as that. It's people make religion very, very complex. It doesn't have to be that complex. We have guidelines, and even our own minds tell us what's right and what's wrong. And these monsters, for God's sake, even if they didn't have any, you know, any kind of training at home, I certainly didn't, but I would never harm a child because I know that it's wrong. 70% of us do not harm our children, even though we've been abused. 30% do. And I read somewhere just the other day, I think it was online, that people make that choice, okay, to abuse their children, that 30%, because they know that it's wrong, okay? And I agree with that, because even if you just watch TV, you see people, you know, once in a while you'll see people going away to jail because they're like with the priests and with the Boy Scouts, and all this stuff is now coming to light. That certainly didn't come to light 10 years ago, or 11 years ago, or 12 years ago, or 13 years ago, when I first started on radio. Absolutely not. People
Correct.
Don't speak about it.
You and Bill have and we're part of this movement. God is opening the door. God is the veil is being lifted because everything's being exposed now. And mm-hmm. this is just the beginning because, again, it's like the children have been crying out to God, right, for decades. And God is not going to ignore the cries of the children. He's going to send you. He's going to send Bill. He's going to send myself. He's going to send Pamela and Mark and everybody. Someone, it's a movement to help those that need help because the cries of the children have to be met. You know, God is not going to ignore those cries anymore. I don't believe that. I've always felt like, for me personally, I felt like this was a mission to write these books, and now that these books are out, they're for people who need them. You know, I believe there's a time and a season for everybody, and I know I'm not the only one. There's you. There's other people that have written books so people can get help now and get that love and that encouragement that's so needed because – again, the children's cry, and even if someone's 60 years old and there's still that child inside, their cry has to be heard by God, and God is mandated to respond because of his love.
Right. There you go. Well, that was well said, very well said. You know, we're coming to the end of the show, and what would you tell people? We always give our guests, you know, last few minutes to offer hope to people. We know what kind of a world we live in. We know that we are moving forward, you know, as far as people understanding, you know, sexual abuse and that it's there. And we certainly need to even make more awareness. And our people need help. They need therapists. They need help from other places. We need a family. Well, we have a family right here at NASCA. But we all have to come together. Bill says, like, under one umbrella. And that's with all the different organizations. And we are getting a little bit more that way now. But what would you offer? What would you offer people as hope?
I would say to go to the Dollar General store or the Family Dollar store or any store, buy a dollar notebook, get a pen and a pencil and some colored markers, and begin to write. Right, begin a journal, call it, you know, my private pain or my stuff that I don't want anyone to know, and begin to write and express and recognize what's bothering you, right? And what I mean by that is that to, let's say I have a bad day, and I write about it. That's going to help me process, right, what was bad about it, what bothered me, what hurt my feelings. And I'm very extra, ultra sensitive. And I think God made me that way in order to write what I do write. Because sometimes, like for instance, to talk about crying. I mean, I will write and tell people cry, you know, release it. And I think God makes us the way we are to help other people. But I would say write a journal and just begin to recognize, hey, this bothered me because of this, right? I was upset today because something triggered me. And when we begin to recognize what is bothering us, that's one thing. Step number two would be to take that issue and go deeper and say, why is this really bothering me? What are the elements of it? And that's when you begin to disclose, right, and kind of dig deeper, like I was saying, to really see what the issue is. And when you begin to write and journal and then pray about it, and I know we're not all faith-based here, but at least to express, you know, this is my concern in this area, and begin to do that every day or every other day. Journaling is really writing therapy, and over time, you're going to discover it feels better. It helps you release. And if and when during that journaling time you begin to cry or you feel emotional, then let it cry, you know, cry and experience that whole the whole release. I mean, to release
right.
is really to disclose. And when you disclose, and this is what I tell people, if you don't trust a human person, then trust God, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit. right? If you don't trust man, I can understand that. Then trust and write to God. And that's why I have my little My Jesus journals. Because when I journal, I'm like, dear God, this happened today. I'm upset. And it becomes like an interactive relationship. And
I understand that.
To me is hope. Hope and writing.
Okay. That was a mouthful, and that's good. Yeah, that's good advice, absolutely. A lot of people are starting to journal, and I think that's a very good thing. Okay, I have
to
end the show. We had a wonderful show, a lot of sharing, and we uncovered a lot of things, too, as we spoke. And I think that was very good. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And don't be a stranger, okay? You know, come back, be a part of the panel, and we'll have you on again, okay?
Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Jill. Thank you, team, and God bless you all.
Yes, and God bless you, too. Thank you so much. Good night now.
Good night.
Blog Talk Radio.
I end up so.